Hey everyone, this is Jamie Bateman. Real quickly, I wanted to share with you something that's been pivotal in the growth and success of my businesses, and that is my partnership with Haven Financial Services. I've been working with Haven for over a year now. Christine Valdez was on episode 70 of this podcast, so go check that out if you want to hear her story. It was a fantastic personal story for sure, but Haven has been awesome. They provide me with monthly reports that are super clear and discernible, and that provides me with clarity and focus so that I can do what I do best, which is running my businesses, not preparing financial reports. Again, if you're in the market for a top-notch financial service company, or if you just want to check one out, go to www.jamiebateman/haven and check out Haven Financial Services. Again, that's jamiebateman/haven. Can't recommend them enough. Christine and her team have been fantastic. So I definitely recommend you check out Haven Financial Services at www.jamiebateman/haven. Let's get back to the show. On today's episode, we sit down with Damian Lupo. He's a seasoned entrepreneur who has launched and grown over 70 companies. He's had a lot of ups and downs. He went from making millions of dollars to being homeless for a brief period of time in the 2008 crash. We also talk about a cool story where in one of the colleges he attended, he put the bookstore out of business. So the school kicked him out because he was putting the store out of business by filling a need for students. He brings a lot of really valuable advice. We do talk a good bit about real estate, but ultimately it's more about business and mindset and how AI is going to be revolutionizing things going forward and how there's going to be a real separation, a real gap between those who are intentional about their life and adding value to others and those who are more passive and consumeristic, if you will. I don't know if that's a word, but this is definitely an episode I'm going to listen to again. He just really brings it with so much valuable information and passion. And it's funny, we talk about the difference between purpose and passion. We talk a lot about how after he made his first few million, he thought he was the richest man, and he was very arrogant and prideful and thought he was the smartest guy in town. And then he lost it all. And so he had to learn a really hard lesson about the fact that purpose and serving others is way more valuable and way more important than focusing on yourself and accumulating assets and money. And now he's found that the money just comes when he is focused on the future and focused on serving others and his purpose and his mission. And he also gets a little vulnerable about relationships. So you're going to want to listen to this whole episode. He gives some awesome tips, some really good book recommendations toward the end. So I hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to From Adversity to Abundance, the go-to podcast for real estate entrepreneurs seeking not just to thrive, but to conquer with resilience and mental sharpness. Each week, join us as we dive into the compelling world of real estate through the lens of mental fitness, where challenges transform into opportunities. Get ready to transform your mindset and expand your understanding of what it takes to succeed in real estate. Let's explore these stories of triumph and resilience together.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the From Adversity to Abundance podcast. I am your host, Jamie Bateman, and today I'm thrilled to have with us Damian Lupo. Damian, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Jamie. It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun one. We were chatting a little bit beforehand, and I'm excited to learn more than I already know about your story. For the listener who may be unfamiliar with you, who are you and what are you up to today?
I'm a long-term entrepreneur. I think I was creating businesses in the womb 50 years ago, and that hadn't really stopped. Every time I tried to do something different, I end up getting derailed. Like in 2010, when I went and volunteered I was like a non-paid employee and got fired as a volunteer because I'm just not good at that. I'm better at creating new systems and disrupting things, and so that's what I'm doing in the housing space today.
Got it. Yeah, I didn't realize myself how much of that entrepreneurial kind of thread was in my own story until looking back, and it's like, no, I had a lot of little businesses I'd start, and gumball machine business and things I don't even tell people about. But so before we jump back into your backstory, I know you have a pretty cool story about when you were in college. What do you walk us through a little bit more of the kind of the maybe the abundance that you experience on a day by day or week to week basis today?
Well, I think the biggest example of the abundance is that there's been a shift from this idea of working when I was in the 2000s. We'll talk about that in a minute. When I was working to create more millions of dollars, there was like this the focus on the outcome. And the abundance today is that there's so much money coming in as a side effect of solving a problem and creating a benefit externally for other people that the once that was really embraced, and that took losing everything in 2008, but once that was embraced, it really is, it's not just a cliche or thing to focus on your purpose and the money follows, but the abundance that I live in now has everything to do with focusing on solving a problem and serving other people. And now
Awesome.
it's there's more money than anybody could, really do anything with in their lifetime, unless they want Boeing business jets, which some people do.
Got it. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I think there's a ton of truth that you just alluded to and just mentioned for sure. And yeah, so let's jump back. So your textbook story about bucking the system, if you will, when you were in college. Let's talk about that. What's the deal with that?
So I went to college four different times, and the first time I had the experience of selling books. Like most people, you buy a book for $100, you sell it back for 50, and then if you want somebody else wants to buy the same book 5 seconds later, they buy it back for 75, and it's a pretty big margin business. And we used traditionally had been stuck in that thing, and before there was Amazon, I was sitting there in college in New Mexico, and I said, this seems like a racket. And I bet I could do better. I bet I could do better for everybody. So I set up a little business, convinced the post office to let me put slips in everybody's mailbox without a stamp, which is probably a felony. I mean, who knows? Statute of limitations is probably expired, I hope. But I did that and said, hey, if you want more money for your books, drop me a list of all your books and that you have for sale, and those that you want to get, let me know. And so I ended up with like hundreds of these slips in my box over a couple of days, and I spent the last week of school running books around because I didn't have any money. So this is being creative and hustling. I was literally going and grabbing books from Bob to run over to Sally and give to Sally. Sally gave me money, and then I ran the money back to Bob. And I did this that last week and paid for school, but the administration got pissed off and said, you're literally putting the bookstore out of business because this is how they make all their money, and we'd like to have them here the rest of the semester. And I said, well, yeah, this is how I'm paying for school. And they said, well, either stop or we're going to throw you out. So I didn't stop, and I left, but I was basically told to leave. And it was a great experience. If you're going to try to disrupt something, you're going to irritate some legacy system, just kind of like what's going to happen in DC here in 2025. A lot of people are going to be really pissed off, but that's what happens when you're disrupting something.
That's really good. So yeah, just briefly before we move on, what was like put some numbers behind like maybe a typical case. What was a case study for one book sale that you did, and then how many times did you do that?
So I think what happened on that $100 book, I probably bought it back for like 66, 67, and sold it for like 73 or so, whatever it was. So basically I was squeezing that margin. Instead of a $25 margin, ended up being like a 10. And when that was the case, then everybody's happy because they're getting more money and they're spending less money. So you do that 1,000 times and literally paid for college.
So even then you were really, I mean, it sounds like the pain you experienced the pain personally, but then you were kind of listening to the market and saying, I mean, there was clearly a demand to solve this problem for a lot of other people. And then you went to school three other times at three other colleges.
Yeah, the first time I was going to be a fighter pilot, and at the end of the semester or the end of the year, they said, unfortunately, your eyes aren't perfect, and so you can fly a desk but not a jet. And I said, bye. That was the end of that. I wasn't really interested in being a bureaucrat or a desk jockey, so left there. And the other times I was still doing it for the wrong reasons. Like one time I went because it was what everybody said I should do, and I got tired of listening to people and saying no, and they kept saying do this. And the last time was actually kind of funny. I went to the University of Texas full time, and I lasted 45 minutes. And it was because I ended up in a government class. The teacher was younger than me. And what we've seen now is that these colleges are full of communists, socialists, and her government dogma was that the government was the reason we have government is to create things and develop resources to be able to distribute to the population. That was literally what she thought our system was. And I thought, I need to get the hell out of here before I get indoctrinated with this nonsense. And so I ran off campus, and that was the end of college for me.
Wow. Okay, so let's fast forward. I know 2008, for the listener who may be unfamiliar, the 2008 real estate crash was a huge deal. If you're not familiar with it, Google it. But Damien, what did your business look like heading into 2008?
So it's interesting if you go back a couple of years, 2004, 2005, I'd been buying houses when it wasn't sexy. I was buying houses when dot-coms were, petfood.com or whatever was a gazillion-dollar company, and people were thinking, oh, that was the way. And I was over there buying houses and taking over mortgages. And so I did all this stuff that was like contrarian, very contrarian. I was doing that stuff. And I ended up buying 150 houses over a period of a few years. And then in 04 and 05, sold off virtually all the houses, made millions of dollars, thought I was King Kong and had all this cash. And the smartest thing I ever did was sell them. The dumbest thing I did was go back into the market and say, oh, you know what? I'm so smart. I'm 10 feet tall, bulletproof, and brilliant. And my timing was great. And sometimes if you're willing to be in activity and action, your timing you'll run into that. It's just when opportunity meets preparation. And that's luck. So in 2008, I had seven projects that were running condo development, apartment rehabilitation, building multimillion-dollar houses, all sorts of flipping things. And I was, in theory, all of them were going to make me $1 million each or more. And within 12 months, they went from making me $1 million to losing over $1 million. And I had a $20 million portfolio that went to negative $5 million in 1 year. So that I went from American Express Black Card and Ferraris to living out of my truck. And my Amex got declined trying to buy toilet paper at Costco, which is embarrassing. But that's what the experience was. I needed to have all that stuff to learn and get through it and shift to where I am today.
Wow. I mean, that's probably several podcast episodes just in that couple of few years there. That's so much. So, I mean, yeah. So looking back, what were the lessons you learned from that? I mean, sounds like I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like pride or ego was a factor. What else did you learn from that time frame?
Well, so fast forward, what I've noticed in myself and other people, the first time people make a bunch of money, their ego and pride thinks it's them, and they think they're invincible, and they think they're more important and smarter. I've watched that with people I work with today. I mean, there's people in different facets, internally, externally. I just watch when people all of a sudden they go from wherever they were, which is sort of like cruising along in middle class, and they end up with millions of dollars, and they turn into giant assholes. And I'm certain I was no different because I wouldn't have wanted to. If I met the guy I was 15 years ago, I would run away. I would literally be like Teflon, bounce off, like terrible, because there's an arrogance and nobody likes it. Like, we like confidence. We like people that are certain. When Michael Jordan says, I'm the best, or LeBron James, or whoever, it's not arrogance, it's certainty because they've earned it. And the problem with making a bunch of money pretty quick, especially young, but really at any time, is that you think that you are so smart. I mean, that's the very normal thing. Or a lottery winner thinks, oh, yeah, I earned this $100 million, or today the Powerball is a billion. And
That's crazy.
they'll lose it within a few years with more. They'll be homeless. And so the lesson there was, one, stay humble. So now when I'm making, the millions and millions and tens and hundreds of millions of dollars, that's the reality of my life. Not a whole lot changes. Another million comes in and I go, okay, interesting. It's kind of like Elon when they said, you just became the richest person in the world. He said, huh, interesting. Went right back to work. It didn't matter because it was just a scorecard. It wasn't the identity. And for me, that was the identity back in 2006 and seven. And so the lesson was, all right, this is cyclical. What's real wealth is the confidence you gain by going through it. And just because you win a bunch does not mean you have any confidence. It literally can mean that you have a bunch of arrogance that you think that you are your God's gift to everything, and the money you're entitled to. I had to understand that there are cycles. I'm not going to win all the time. In fact, I'm probably going to lose more. I've started more than 70 companies, and the majority of those have not made money. They've been really great learning opportunities. That's what an entrepreneur has to embrace, that you're going to be wrong more than you will be right. And being one out of 10 or one out of 100 is all you need to absolutely crush it. But most people don't really understand that, and they get tied up in the wins and the losses as if that's who they are. And so that was a huge part of that process.
Got it. No, and it's like we like to keep it real on this show. And the fact is, you know, entrepreneurship is not for everyone. It's not for the faint of heart. It's not easy. You've got to be willing to work through those ups and downs for sure, and take a lot of losses, but learn from them as well, like you said. So, okay, so you ended up homeless, right? How long were you homeless for? What did that look like?
So that was that. That was the, there was a transition period where, I mean, there were some days where I was in my vehicle, and this was, you know, this was less than a month where I was in this process, but I was sometimes in a vehicle, and sometimes I was sleeping on a couch, but sometimes I was in a place where there wasn't a couch, and I was trying to figure out where I was going to live. I had given my house that I was living in back to the bank, and I was, you know, I was just kind of wandering, figuring out my next stop in life, you know, what that was going to look like. So it, you know, one day isn't really that big of a deal. Like being homeless is basically camping. If it's one day, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But when you don't have an address, like I didn't have, I had a UPS store. And so people, you know, my driver's license was really not really valid because there's no residence. And what's interesting is I found out you can have a hotel as your address, your actual residence.
Really?
Yeah. You can put it on your driver's license. It's legal as far as I know in every state, because some people actually do live in hotels and it can be a residence. So, you know, you learn a lot of weird things in this, in this cycle. You also realize how cold it is when you, cause we're used to creature comforts. We're used to things being easy. We've generally become very soft, especially in this country, in America. It's very easy to just get by, and we really haven't been tested to any real way like people were during the Depression or the World Wars or the Civil War. We've had it pretty damn easy, and most people, I think with what's coming with AI and robotics and everything, it's going to be very, very challenging for most people because they don't know how to adapt.
That's a good point. Yeah. I just a few months ago read the book, Comfort Crisis. I can't remember the author's name, but that's a good one for the listener to check out. Okay. So walk us through from a business standpoint, how you recovered from all that. I mean, after you were homeless for a month, I mean, what were your first steps and how did that progress?
So I did what's interesting to me. I'm seeing some people do this. Like I decided to go volunteer for a political campaign.
Really?
And it seemed like, and you know, when you're lost, you just sort of bounce around like a ping pong ball or a pinball.
Sure.
And I didn't know where I was going to land. I didn't know what to do. The big problem is I didn't really go deep into the truth. Like I had to do work after I left that campaign in 2010. I had to go work on me. So I spent a couple of years with a therapist coach and we just dug, man. Like we peeled back the layers. And it was really figuring out who I was, because what I'd been doing is I'd been chasing surface level hedonistic enjoyment and getting a lot of stuff and a lot of fun feelings. And I wasn't really doing anything that was fulfilling. In 2012, I wrote a book called Reinvented Life. And that was kind of the culmination of the work I'd been doing.
Okay.
And one of the chapters is called Success Versus Fulfillment. I was really good at success with all the shiny objects.
Yeah.
But there wasn't really much fulfilled in my life. And this was the switch. There was a switch to doing something that was more external, meaning for other people and not just for me and taking and consuming. Yeah. So that was the big shift. And that's what it took. It took a couple of years of doing very hard work. And that's the hardest work anybody's ever going to do is on themselves.
Yeah, no, another book just popped into my head is, I think it's called The Second Mountain, David Brooks, which he talks basically about that is the first half of his life, so to speak, is about chasing success. And then the second half is more about purpose and serving others and being fulfilled through that. So before we move on, I mean, that's 2010. I mean, that's pretty early. A lot of people talk about working on themselves now. And I think it's important. I'm not brushing, you know, minimizing that at all. I just think now it's a popular buzzword and buzz term. For you, you know, that was 14 to 12 years ago. What did that look like really? And you know, you can get as personal as you want, but what does that mean working on yourself in your case?
Well, I mean, the first thing is acknowledging the truth. And so that was the question for 18 straight months. Every week I went in and Frank and I sat down and it basically the question was, what is true? And we just kept going deeper with more onion layers. And what that looked like is when I looked back, I was like, wow, I was an asshole. And it was about more for Damien. And it wasn't, I was helping people with their housing, but it was like, okay, I'm going to help with their housing so I can get cash. Like that was the focus.
Right.
Instead of letting the cash happen because there was a mission to improve housing. Now, this the shift today, which is the opposite of that, is all about lowering pricing, lowering, making it more affordable by solving the housing crisis with these 10 million missing units that we have. And yeah. It had to be, there had to be a shift. And the shift was really triggered big time in 2013 when I was talking to my dad right before he died. And it was because of this conversation where he looked at me and he said, you know, there were so many things that I wanted to do, and it wasn't about going and getting more stuff. My dad was a hoarder. Like, he had everything. He found eBay, and his life became way fuller. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. And I had to clean out all his crap when he died.
Yeah.
But it was a shift from this idea of just getting more stuff to creating more experiences for more people. And I realized that most people were playing safe. They were tiptoeing safely to death's door. And they weren't really going for it, and they were being delusional. And so I spend all my time now thinking about money and finances. Why? Because it's objective truth. Like, you can't, you can either, like, you're going to be real about the numbers, or you're going to lie. You can do all sorts of lying about doing work on yourself. Easy to be subjective, and it's hard to pin it down. With money, look, either you're in debt or you're not in debt.
Yeah.
You're spending more than you make, or you're not. Either you've got more than enough for your life or not.
That is true. So it's a great everything scorecard.
It's true. I mean, like, there's just truth with the money.
Right.
And so that was the shift. It was saying, okay, what's real? What am I really doing? Why am I taking on debt? What do I even believe that I'm worth $1 million or 10 million or 100 million? What's my connection to that? What's my thermostat? And I wasn't thinking about any of that stuff. And so the idea of doing personal development, working on yourself, it is not a weekend course. It is a daily practice. It's like every Sunday, that's what I'm doing. People are out there watching football, drinking beer, whatever, like whatever floats your boat.
Sure.
I'm spending time thinking and writing and reflecting and then asking myself, how can I be better? And ultimately, that's the work that you have to do. It's a consistency. It's not a weekend event.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's really good. And I'm glad you said that because, yeah, you may have kind of done kind of a sprint, if you will, on the self-development side in 2010, you know, for 18 months. But you're still, there's still work to be done. You're never done, right? You're never done, done. So from a business standpoint, a real estate investment standpoint, practically speaking, what did that look like? What have the last 15 years looked like for you specifically?
So what was interesting is after getting burned, part of the process of the, you know, of going through that, I was very gun shy about doing anything. I certainly didn't want to touch real estate. And so part of the problem with being in the penalty box after you go through mayhem is you miss opportunities. So I missed opportunities for about 5 years when there was a ton of opportunity because everything was beaten down. Being a proper contrarian, 2009, 2010, 2011 were incredible years. I was not in the game. I was like in the bleachers or out in the parking lot. I was gone. And so it took me about 10 years to actually buy real estate again. And that was just a primary residence. I was happy to not own real estate because that sucker burned me bad.
Sure.
And that was the process. So I missed that stuff. Most of the real estate that I'm involved with now is stuff that I'm using. It's kind of like Patrick Bet David. He doesn't go and invest in stuff. He's investing in businesses. He has real estate, so do I. And it's whether I'm living in it or I have factories or I have teams, like it's all business. My personal preferences and my thinking around opportunity is the opportunity is in business because there's too much cash chasing fixed assets. It doesn't matter what the fixed asset is, but especially real estate, there's so much dumb money chasing it. It's driving down yields, driving up prices.
Yeah.
And I'm not a speculator. I may have been in the past, but I'm not anymore. So I'm interested in building things, whether it's, you know, it's companies, manufacturing companies, building people. It's about building things that I can actually influence, not hoping that the market is crazier than I was yesterday, tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I love that. And it's, I used to think the word creative meant to be like artistic and that kind of thing. And the more I've talked to entrepreneurs and processed, it's like, no, I'm actually creative too. I like building things. When you're building something, you're creating something, right? Adding value. Maybe it's not necessarily from scratch. Maybe it is, but so business-wise, point out one or two of the businesses you're most proud of that you've been a part of or that you've started in the last 10 years.
So there's the theme for everything. And that's to take a step back. The question is, why am I doing a business? Because people oftentimes are trying to figure out what to do. What business should I do? What should I invest in? And my question is, what problem are you trying to solve? And if there's a deep mission and why, it'll become very obvious. Not only will it become a yes for something, it'll become a no for almost everything. If you don't have a mission, if you don't have a why, if there's not something that really drives your core, like your deep mission, your heart, your soul, then you're going to be chasing all sorts of shiny nuts. You'll be like a drunk squirrel chasing shiny nuts. It's really bad. And I look at that and I say, okay, so what matters to me? What matters to me is people are enslaved by money. And so the mission for the last 15 years has been to free people from financial slavery, to break their shackles, their financial shackles, and have at least 1 million people freed. And so that started off with this helping people with their retirement money, because that's where most people's net worth is. And I don't count your house, because your house you're living in, you're not going to eat your house. Mm-hmm. So their retirement accounts, they had all this money. There's $50 trillion in retirement accounts. Mm-hmm. So I realized people didn't really have control. They didn't really know what was going on. It was kind of a lottery event. Yeah. And I started the EQRP company, where I was helping people direct their retirement accounts into real estate and Bitcoin and gold. And
other alternative investments. Yeah.
Alternative investments.
Sure.
And that was, so that, and then there's a precious metals company. And then ultimately the private equity, where we're building things like Frametech. And all these things are centered on this mission of freeing people. So like Frametech, we have 400 plus investors. They get to be a part of something that's creating housing, and they're going to become very, very wealthy financially, and helping them break their financial shackles because of this. So everything is about that. The amount of wealth that's created for Damien is a massive side effect, but it's not the focus. I didn't go in here and say, I'm going to make $100 million or $1 billion. That's just going to happen as a side effect with a lot of damn work. It's not, it's not an accident. I mean, there is a grind, and there's a discipline and a pain, because you have to give up virtually everything else. If you want a gold medal, I mean, ask Michael Phelps. What did he have in his life for 10 years? Swimming and eating. That was it. There was nothing else. I mean, literally probably half and half, you know, the amount of time he spent eating and swimming.
He ate a lot of calories. I'm from the area where he's from.
So, I mean, that's where it is today.
Sure.
It's that process of becoming obsessed about the thing that's going to have the biggest impact on the biggest part of society. And then everything stems from that.
No, I love it. And like you said, you're passionate about it. So that adds, yes, there's a ton of work, not downplaying that at all. But if you don't have that passion or that drive or that why behind it, you're not going to be putting in the hours and the effort. It's just not going to happen. Right. So what else does you mentioned Sundays, you mentioned kind of a weekly routine you have. We don't need to go through hour by hour, but what does a week look like for you? What kind of, where does that discipline surface and that work ethic? What does that look like?
So I'll get into that stuff. One of the things that I think is really important to emphasize here, that there's a difference between passion and purpose. And all over social media, this is one of those things
that
people
point.
Are like, find your passion. I'm like,
sure.
Bunkus, man. Passion is fleeting. Passion is fun. Passion is exciting. I'll tell you what, a lot of the last few years, last 10 years has not been passion. It's been grind and pain. And you know, I'm bald, so I can't lose any more hair. And that's part of the process. You're going to give up certain things. You're not going to have people say, well, you know, you work all the time. And I actually love it. And even when it's painful, I do. But I love that I'm doing something that's fulfilling my potential. So at the end of my life, I'm not going to wake up one day and go, this is my last day. And I feel like there's no regret. So I think that's important for people to find purpose.
For sure.
Forget about the passion for a second. Figure out the purpose. What do you, and really what purpose is all about, serving other people and not
just
necessarily.
That's what I was going to point out. The big difference is passion is focused on yourself and what you enjoy and what you like, and you know, the purpose is really about serving others. I do think that there's some crossover, because you mentioned you enjoy the work, you know, and your purpose, the fact that you have such a high level of purpose with your work, I think adds to the fact that you enjoy your work. And so that, but you're definitely right. You know, I think purpose is a much bigger and more long lasting principle or, you know, thing to solve for. But from a work ethic or just day-to-day grind standpoint, are you putting in 5 hours a day, 15 hours a day? What does your week look like typically?
So typically I get up and I'm hitting the ground running, studying. I'll usually study for a period of time, for an hour or two, and then I'm at the gym. And that's most days. More often than not, that's the rhythm. There's a mental and a physical part of this whole process. And some people think you can think your way into this, and some people think that that's not true. I think that you have to have both, but you have physically, like I go to the gym to change my state, and it's, there's a chemical process. Yeah. And so like one of the things that I recently did is I gave up drinking completely. And that's a chemistry experiment on my body. It's a physiological improvement because it's a poison. It's like it having toxic people in your life, putting toxic elements into you from a bottle or the toxic food that's everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, all these things are, I'm being conscious about this. What am I choosing? And most people are going through, they're just going through these emotions. Habits. You know, they're not thinking.
They're not being intentional about it. Yep.
Very, very unintentional is how our society is. And it's a click world, like a bunch of chickens just pecking at things. And they don't really think.
Right.
And so the process has been, okay, being deliberate about things, clearing out, like part of my ritual that I do every year in December is clearing out any of the clutter physically, emotionally, people-wise, getting rid of the stuff that's not serving me and opening up space. And so every day I'm constantly asking, what can I let go of? And then building and serving. And so how am I serving other people today? Am I creating content? Am I talking to an investor? Am I talking with my team? What am I doing to give the best of me to society and other people? So that, I mean, that's all day. And that's typically all day at the office, all day at my house. And then I'll go somewhere to have some human interaction, and I'll spend another 2 or 3 hours doing more work, either on the business or creating content. Mm-hmm. So it's easily 12 plus hours a day.
Gotcha.
And does that leave a lot of room for other stuff? Not really. And that's the choice. And it's not for everybody, like you said earlier.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I'm glad you pointed out that you have to cut things out. You've got to be intentional about what you're not pursuing as well. That's critical for sure. And creating that space to create that clarity about what your priorities really should be, where your focus should be. Awesome. I've got a bunch of several rapid fire questions here. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
What's one thing that people misunderstand about you, Damien? Excuse me.
I've heard this for 25 years. People say all work and no play makes Johnny a dull boy or some damn saying like that. Mm-hmm. And I laugh and they don't get it because they don't have anything that's deeply purposeful in their life. Meaning they might have kids, they might have something, but that when you're trying to change the world, it's very different than somebody that's not. And people don't get that. And so they'll tend to say, oh, you just work Friday, Saturday, like typical Saturday night, I am working on my goals. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about something, I'm studying. And most people are out getting wasted or watching football or whatever they're doing.
That's a
very big misunderstanding. I don't think, and you know, you get to a point where you don't care, and that's where the freedom lies, when you don't care what other people think.
Yeah, no, that's really good. And the fact is everybody wants the results that you've been able to produce, but many people fall into the victim mindset, you know, and say, must be nice to be Damien and have all this money, you know, but we've heard clearly you're putting in the work and it's very intentional. What's one of your biggest failures that we haven't talked about? Anything come to mind?
I mean, one of the biggest failures is in relationships. They're going into a relationship. Oftentimes over the years, the relationship has been secondary to the mission. Mm. And that doesn't help with longevity of relationships. It tends to make relationships pretty short lived. And so I would look back, if there's something I could change, it would be more intentional. I'll give you an example. In 2005, I had a relationship that ended, and my ex-girlfriend she went to therapy and she said, I'd really like you to go. And I said, well, if you need therapy, then keep going. But you know, I don't need to go to therapy. She gave me some books, the five love languages and his needs, her needs. And I looked at him and I was like, yeah, whatever. We broke up, and then I went and read those books and I started going to therapy, and I was like, man, you know what? I was the problem and it wasn't her. And so that it's the arrogance, the ego, it's the things, and it was my mistake. And I've done that. I did that with a number of relationships where I wasn't allowing myself to open up and fully commit. What's funny is I'll share that sometimes, and I think it gets used against me, where somebody says, well, you do this all the time. I'm like, well, actually, it may not be that I'm doing that. It may be that I just don't want to be in this relationship with you. But in the past, I had great relationships. I just wasn't willing to be in and be open. And so that was, you know, that was a big part of the past that my intention now is to not repeat those things, try to learn the lesson once.
Sure. No, I appreciate you being, you know, just vulnerable and honest, and nobody has it all put together 100%, right?
No.
So, yeah. If you could go back and if you could have coffee with any historical figure, whom would you choose?
I would really love to have known my grandfather who died when I was two. My grandfather and great grandfather died the same year. And so to
Wow.
me, that's a historical figure because it's part of who I am.
Sure.
It's where I come from. And I would love that. I'd also like to understand, I mean, it'd be nice to have a latte with Jesus. And that's just because what one person has had more influence on humanity.
For
That's
sure.
pretty big influence. So having
Yeah.
a cup of coffee and just saying, hey, I'd like to understand you, first person.
Yeah.
And that and people will say, well, that was the Bible's God's word, and I don't understand, I who knows, but what I would like to do is get closer to that source and have that influence. I think that I don't think that there's a downside for having that level of connection to something that's so impactful on the entire planet.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the word influencer nowadays has a new meaning, but there's really
Yeah.
probably not a bigger influencer in the history of life than Jesus. If you were given $10 million tomorrow, what would you do with it?
So it's interesting because I like the question, and I can tell you, having had that happen multiple times, where $10 million shows up in a different ways. I can tell you in the last couple of years when it has shown up, nothing changed. There's still a mission. The only difference is sometimes it's just a reallocation. So it may be that I'm shifting assets, and maybe there's more facility that I'm buying, or there's more people that I'm hiring, or. It's but it, in terms of like losing my mind, which is what I did when I bought my Ferrari, and oh man, I got millions of dollars,
Yeah.
thought I was rich, and I acted like I was super rich, but I was actually just sort of rich, barely rich. And so $10 million, like I actually have a playbook. It's a one piece of paper, so I know there's a certain thing I do with 1,000, 10,000, 100,000, 1,000,000, 10,000,000, and 100,000,000. I can tell you from that sheet, there are things I have guidelines. I have guidelines on how I do business. I have guidelines on what I invest in. And most of those are so I know what to say no to, which is most everything. There is a list of things that will happen. And I adjust this every quarter because things change. Like part of it might be I'm going to pay off this building, or I'm going to do this type of investment. And I may look and say, I'm overweighted in that thing. And I
Sure.
don't need that. I don't need another facility because I have more capacity in my current facility. This is part of what I think about Saturdays,
Interesting.
Sundays. Very intentional about what that money is going to be. The reason that most people lose all their money when they make it, whether it's a million or a billion in a lottery event, they have no freaking idea, and their thermostat, they haven't thought about it, so they repel it. They get rid of it because it's like very uncomfortable. It's not uncomfortable to me. Like a hundred
Yeah.
million, I have a playbook for that. So,
Wow. Yeah.
as it comes, it's just a normalized thing.
Gotcha. Now, I've had a few guests say that really 10 million wouldn't change their world. They'd barely notice it, but I don't think we've had anyone who's been so intentional and already has a process. Basically it's like plug and play into the existing system. That's really cool. This one's not on my sheet here, but who do you look up to? Who do you take advice from? Who do you follow?
So I've had a mentor for the last 5, 6 years, a guy named Jay Geyer, who
Okay.
teaches dentists. He teaches doctors how to build practices. And what I love about him is he's been down the road. He's worth hundreds of millions of dollars, and he's 10 years older. So he's been through more cycles. He's been through life. He's very open and transparent. And so I spend time listening to guys like that and modeling. And so I'm looking at and I'm looking for some new people because as you grow through things, it would be like it'd be very hard for Elon Musk to go find a mentor.
Sure.
Like I don't know who that would be,
Yeah.
and that's probably why he's going to Mars because he's looking for a mentor.
Right.
He's got to
That's
find
funny.
somebody that's under, not of
Yeah.
this world.
Right.
So I mean, it's an interesting question because who was Bill Gates' mentor? Love him or hate him, who did he hang out with? Warren Buffett. The guy's an
Sure.
extra 20 years on him, so there's a
Yeah.
value. So I've got people like that I'm and now I'm creating those environments because the ones that I had been in a lot of ways, I outgrew just because when you're doing things so fast and so big, you're going to outgrow a lot of people in your life. And there are certain people you're like, hey, I want you to stay in my life. I want to be in your life because we're growing together. But if you're just trying to drag along everybody that is not growing the way you're growing, you're
Yeah.
going to get stuck because it's too much weight that's holding you, not propelling you.
Love that. It's really good. How about a book or two? You mentioned your own book. Is there another book or two that you could recommend for my listener?
Yeah, I really like Mastery by George Leonard. There's another one by Robert Greene, but George Leonard is a
Oh, right.
martial
That's
artist.
Robert Greene one was one I was that popped into my head when you said that.
Yeah, and it's very popular. The one by George Leonard, he and I are both martial artists, the same style with Aikido, and it's about the mastery, because in martial arts you're often doing the same thing literally for years, and you're like, man, nothing's happening, and it's a plateau process. And I got this, and I think it's important for everybody. There is a process in life where you're going to feel like you're just going through motions, nothing is happening. If you've got something that if your quest is mastery, eventually you'll pop and you go, whoa, it's like easy. And it's just like it's like I'm not even doing anything, it's just happening. And that's there's a process of mastery. You never get to mastery. There's O Sensei, the guy that created Aikido, was like he literally wanted to be he has to be buried in his white belt, not his black belt. And most people are trying to get to black belt in something instead of living as a permanent student, being curious and this quest for mastery. And so I really appreciate mastery and the willingness to show up and grind and bleed and that meaning you're going to go through the pain because there's
Sure.
that is the process for entrepreneurship and building businesses and creating wealth. It is pain. And then when we started talking earlier, talking about how soft society is, most people are looking for the outcome. They look at the highlight reels on social media. They don't want to see all the pain. They don't want to see the struggle, all the crap you got to learn, all the mistakes you got to make, all the people laughing at you. They want to skip past that. They just want the money. And that is bull. Like that is not how it works. You got to go there and grind and literally hurt. And that's David Goggins. I mean
Goggins, yep.
that he talks about this all the time. Like you've got to be willing to go through the grind and you know, embrace the suck, as Jocko says.
For
Like
sure,
that's
yeah.
part of the process.
Right. Love it. So you mentioned AI earlier. What do you, how do you, nobody knows for sure how this is all going to play out, but how do you envision, maybe the next 5 years, either in your businesses or just the marketplace in general? How do you see things shaping up as far as AI is concerned?
AI is literally going to disrupt everything. Throughout history, we've had disruptive things where people said, "Oh, the jobs are going away because the car is now here and all the horses," and they would say things, "The TV is going to disrupt people," and there's new. It's creative disruption. We have new technologies. We create new jobs. The difference between now and back then was those things created disruptions that would roll out over decades, and new things would evolve. What we're seeing now is the acceleration of accelerating change in technology with microprocessing power and AI getting to the point where there's the singularity event where it can think like a human. I mean, it's doing art, it's doing reporting, it's doing accounting. Like you think about the robotics and the learning with Elon and what he's doing with Optimus and this convergence of all of the network of thinking and data processing. What you're going to see, and we're seeing it, it's just going to happen faster and faster, is that humans, the way that we do work and the way that we interact with society and our value is going to shift because you're basically going to either own the processing, own the creation space with the capital and the manufacturing and the data, or you're going to be saying, I need handouts because I don't have anything of value. I used to pay a guy to transcribe podcasts for me, and I was paying him like $3 an hour. He lived in Africa. That's all free now. So we're going to the digitization and the demonetization where it's literally going, everything is going to zero. What that means is we've probably got a 5-year window where there's an opportunity, and fortunately, we have an opportunity in 2025. Where I think we're going to see a boom. I think we're going to see an unleashing of capital in the spirit of entrepreneurism. And that is important because if people are on the sidelines waiting or they're going and doing something traditionally, like if you go to college for the next 5 years, I think honestly you're screwed because you're going to show up 5 years later, your stuff's going to be irrelevant, you're going to go way past where the market and the technology is going to change so fast, you're going to be irrelevant. So now is the time to create something where you've got some type of capital, you've got some type of creation space. I mean, all those things that were sacred, whether it's medicine or accounting or legal or even plumbing, like this stuff it's going away. And so you've got to figure out how you're going to get in front of that. Raoul Paul talks about this all the time. We've literally got 5 to 10 years. 10, I think, is being generous. I think realistically by 2030, the world will not recognize itself compared to 2025.
So this may be a tough one to answer, but if I'm a new, say, real estate investor or young entrepreneur, 25 years old, I'm out of college, what does that mean for me? What steps do I take to embrace AI and get out in front of the curve?
I think one of the most valuable things is to attach yourself to whether it's getting involved in a SpaceX or a Tesla or going to a place where the innovation is happening, where you can be immersed in it, because you'll naturally start evolving with it. If you're outside of that stuff and it's happening, it's going to happen faster than you're going to adapt, because you won't pay attention. But if it's your daily experience, so you've got to be in a place. You also have to just be realistic about who the people are that are around you. If they're all a bunch of bureaucrats or people that are middle class, and look, that's where most people are. They're in the middle class. Sure. You've got to, if you're asking the question, if somebody's listening and saying, well, what do I do? You probably need to upgrade your people, upgrade to the people that are future thinking, that are creating, and don't just stay with the legacy people that are doing Friday and Saturday football and beer. Like if that's your life, you're going to end up you're going to be voting for people that are going to give you free crap next, you know, in the election in 4 years. That's what you're going to be asking for and begging for. Because you're going to go, I've been obsolete,
made obsolete. I don't know.
We're gonna create words on this show. No, you've been totally made obsolete.
Yeah.
So the environment is the ultimate hack. Whether your people and the environment you're in. If you're like, if you want to go to the forefront, you go to Miami, you go to Dubai, you go to Singapore, go to those places. Mm-hmm. If you're like, man, I can't because I got family or whatever. Okay, fine. But your life is your own damn fault. Mm-hmm. Like you are going to be a reflection of your habits, your behaviors, your choices. And most people are going to end up being pissed off. And it's like, look, you did it. You chose. You're not in prison. You're not in Florence in Colorado in a Supermax. If you are, well, don't worry about it, because you're just going to be in a cage no matter what. But the rest of people making that choice, that is your choice.
Well, that's a really good answer. I mean, and the fact is, you know, AI doesn't mean we're making all people obsolete. You're basically saying there's going to be an even greater divide between those who are intentional and adding value and creating and those who are not. And so for the average person who may be a little bit on the fence or not sure which direction to go here, make sure you surround yourself with that first group who is knowledgeable, intentional, plugged into where things are headed, because it is ever changing. We can't know exactly now how it's going to look in 5 years, but the environment and the people that you surround yourself with are critical. That's really good. What's something that you've never shared on a podcast before that you'd like to share?
I don't think I've been on a podcast with as big of a beard as, and this is, if this is audio, you have no idea what's happening right now, but that's, you know,
it's funny. People, you can check it out on YouTube.
So you have to go find this. If you're listening, go to YouTube and see the beard. Like I've never shared the level of beard, and we're trying something different.
Yeah. I love it. Damien, what's one thing that I have not asked you that you wish I had?
One of the biggest things that I've learned over the last, you know, since the late 90s is how much concern I used to have for what people thought about me. And it's still there. It's not completely gone.
Sure.
But I had a mentor 20 years ago that said, you have no idea how free you'll be until you let go of what other people think about you. And I would have made mistakes way faster. I would have fallen. I would have gone bankrupt. It wouldn't have mattered. There's so much concern about what people think, even the mistakes. People go and they look stuff up on the internet. They're like, oh man, I heard you did this. Man, that just makes you a bad person. And I laugh. I'm like, you can judge all you want. I don't give a shit. Like, it doesn't matter to me what you think. I'm too busy on my mission. Mm-hmm. And embracing that thinking as early as possible, meaning like now, 20 years ago, like planting a tree, better 20 years ago, best time is right now.
Sure.
And that was the thing, that thinking is truly where you become free, when you let go of what other people think. Because quite frankly, they're not thinking about you anyway. They're thinking about their own damn life.
Right. And they may not have the best advice for you anyway, even if they are thinking about you. But you're right. Everyone's absorbed with their own day-to-day and their own problems and their own concerns. But I like the fact that you've articulated that it doesn't mean, when you say that, it doesn't mean you're selfish and you're just focused on yourself. You don't care what anyone thinks whatsoever or what anyone else needs. You've already talked the entire episode about how your businesses are all geared towards serving others and the purpose, you know, solving people's problems, and that's your purpose. So it's not like you're just saying it's all Damien and it's all about me. I'm going to do me. I don't care about anybody else at all. It's just you don't care necessarily about what the masses think of you. And so you're going to do you, but that means adding value to others. So
And here's a distinction that I think is really important. When you're focusing on a mission for other people, you do care what they think about what you create for them. You don't care what the critics think. And that's the difference. I don't give a single rip about what anybody, if somebody says, man, what I heard from you, you're stupid. I don't care. Because what I'm convinced of, what I'm certain of, is that there are other people, it might be one, it might be a thousand, it might be a million other people that are going to benefit from what I say. So they don't erect statues for critics. Like, we've heard that before, and it's true. Nobody gives a crap. The critics, we had a lot of critics that have been out there my adult life. We see all these people that are crapping all over people in the media, and I laugh and I'm like, yeah, but those people are basically worthless. They're not adding value to society.
Yeah.
And so I just don't really care what they think. I do care what the market thinks and the humans that I'm serving. I care what they think.
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. I just watched a documentary on Teddy Roosevelt, you know, the man in the arena comes to mind. But Damien, where can our listener reach you? Where can we find you online? What's the best way to contact you?
Best thing to do is grab a copy. I wrote a book, it's a mini book. It's literally like less than 10 pages. It's the 10 steps to 10 million. I have a firm belief that if you're not pursuing 10 million in net worth, then you are never going to be free. Meaning if you bump into a million, which anybody can bump into a million, work at McDonald's, don't spend everything you eat or you make, then you can literally get to $1 million. It's not going to make you free. A million is like the new, not even middle class. So I created this thing, having gone through the 10 and the $100 million process and building that type of net worth. This is the process that I've seen, not just with me, with other people. And it's a step-by-step approach. And then you got to do the work. So turnkeyretirement.com, you can download the 10 steps to 10 million, and it'll give you a framework for how I've done it and how a lot of other people have done it. It's not about being lucky enough to start off as employee 7 at WhatsApp and make, you know, a $26 billion exit or whatever. It's literally about you having the power, you having the ability and the choice. And then you make the choice every day, and ultimately you'll wake up. There's nobody literally in the United States that couldn't go from wherever you are to 10 million inside of 10 years. This playbook will make it happen if you're willing to do the work.
Fantastic. That's really, really good. Damien Lupo, anything else we need to address before we hop off?
I think everybody needs to take a breath with all that fire hose.
That was a lot. I definitely need to re-listen to that one, this episode. This was you're spitting fire, my friend. It's really good. So thanks for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And to the listener, thank you for spending your time and your attention with us. We really appreciate that. We also appreciate it if you do share the episode with a friend or anyone who could benefit from that. And we also love 5-star reviews. Thanks, everyone. Take care.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversitytoabundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
Hey there, it's Jamie Bateman. Ever felt boxed in by life's challenges? Dive into my new book, From Adversity to Abundance, Inspiring Stories of Mental, Physical, and Financial Transformation, available now on Amazon. From a former bank robber's redemption to a young entrepreneur's victory over hurdles, these stories are not just inspiration. They're the roadmaps to your transformation. Whether for you or as a powerful gift to friends and family, especially those who might not tune into podcasts, this book is a beacon to a life of abundance. Ignite that inner fire and set your course to the life you've imagined. Purchase yours today on Amazon and light the path for someone you love.